You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and I have to apologize up front. I'm a little bit under the weather. I have been for about a week or so. So if I sound a little nasally, it's because I'm not feeling 100%. But to get things started off, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Elk 101 University of Elk Hunting. Remember, if you use the code ROOKIES, you can save 20% off the University of Elk Hunting, and totally worth it. I think that that is one of the best tools that you can use prior to going out to the woods for your 2019 elk season. Whether you're a rookie that's going out for your first year or whether you're somebody that's been at it for years and years, there's something that you're going to take away from that course. It covers absolutely everything from, for the beginner, for selecting the right elk call to use, bugling tips, e-scouting, packing your elk out of the woods, prepping it for taxidermy. I mean, it just covers everything from start to finish. So jump over, check that out. There's a link in the description for the podcast. And remember, use the code ROOKIES, save 20%. Go over and check it out. Next thing I want to talk about real quick is an Instagram giveaway that I have going on currently. And that is a one-year membership to Onyx Hunt Maps. Go to Instagram, look at my profile, at Backcountry Rookies, and you'll see a picture on there, and it's a picture of a Onyx Hunt scratch-off ticket. Click on that, like the post, follow me, follow Onyx Hunt, and then tag three of your buddies in that post. If you haven't done it already, go over and do that for your chance to win a one-year membership to Onyx Hunt. Can't hardly beat it. It's the best mapping system out there. So this week is the nutritional tip from Kyle Camp, but I've got a really long show that we're getting ready to go into, and that's with Pat Casey. He's the archery hunt winner from last year's archery hunting story giveaway. And the show is a little over an hour long, and then Kyle's nutritional tip is about 10 minutes. So I'm putting Kyle's nutritional tip at the end. So make sure after the show you stick around and listen to Kyle's tip. And it talks about timing of when to eat and how you should eat and whether you need a pound of protein shake as soon as you get done with a workout or just kind of how to time that, all of that that nutrition and protein consumption. So make sure you check that out. I've got a couple other things we're going to cover at the end also that have to do with some upcoming shows and some other upcoming giveaways. We got all that administrative stuff out of the way. Let's get into it with Pat Casey, the archery hunting story giveaway.
Today is the archery winner from last year's hunting story giveaway. And like I said, this is Pat Casey. Pat wrote in an awesome story. We had tons of awesome stories that came in. Pat's was one of the ones that went to the top of my list. And then I sent it out to my team members at Backcountry Rookies, the guys that work for the team. And ultimately, they selected Pat's story as the winner. And I was super excited when his was picked because it was those kind of one of those ones that I really wanted it to win. So I was glad that it got picked. With that being said, I'm just going to jump right into it, let Pat introduce himself. And Pat has his wife, Amber, with him. So we'll hear a little bit from her and kind of hear their hunting background a little bit. And then we're just going to jump into the story and start talking about it. And I think you're going to enjoy it. So, Pat, let's hear a little bit about your background and we'll go from there.
So yeah, we're sitting here in lower Michigan. Yeah, I actually grew up in the upper peninsula, so I'm a full-blooded Youper. but I grew up small game hunting, rough grouse and rifle hunting deer. And I didn't really get into bow hunting until I graduated college in 2005, surprisingly. So I've only been in it 14 years, and I've learned a ton of stuff over the past 14 years. It's crazy.
So have you learned enough where you tune your own bows and you got your own press and all that stuff, or do you still go to a bow shop?
So I did just buy a press, but I haven't used it yet. still going to the shop. I mean, I want to start learning how to do a few things, like tying in a peep or tying in a D-loop.
Yeah, like setting up a bow from start to finish. We would still go to a shop for that, but yeah, the tuning stuff you do.
Yeah, I mean, I can throw a rest on, throw a sight on, set up a sight, set up a rest. So, yeah, I mean, from start to finish, I get to do a lot of it, which is kind of nice because I've learned a lot just from YouTube or a couple of friends of ours. One of them's shot professionally, and he's kind of filled us in on a lot of info too. So that's been huge. But I like doing my own stuff like that, and it makes you learn a lot too, especially when you're out hunting, and if something breaks or something's not acting right, you kind of know what to do to kind of bring it back into normal range, I guess.
You're doing a heck of a lot better than I am. I can barely shoot arrows out of my bow, it seems like. Yeah. You know, if you could tie in a peep and you could set up a rest, you're in good shape.
Yeah, it's fun.
Going from Michigan, there you are, hunting whitetails and grouse and all the good stuff out there in the Midwest. What took you to Western hunting, to big game hunting? What drew you to that?
I kind of knew, I mean, back in like high school and stuff, I always wanted to go out west hunting. And at that time, before I got into bull hunting, I figured I was just going to go out there with the rifle and figure something out. And nothing ever happened, but it was always in the back of my mind as like one of my top things that I wanted to do on my bucket list. And 4 years ago was the first time I had ever went out west, and first time ever elk hunting. And I went out there with a buddy of mine, and it was kind of on a whim. He asked me, like, in July. I bought an over-the-counter tag the beginning of August, and we went out there in September.
That's awesome.
Or, yeah, Montana. Yeah.
Montana. Okay.
So cool. I didn't know squat about elk hunting. And at that point, I mean, yeah, I had bow hunted, but it was basically go to the pro shop, ask them what arrows I need for the poundage I'm shooting, and I would just go home and shoot. And I didn't know anything on both sides between hunting elk and my equipment. And I got lucky because my friend that I went with, he knew a property owner out there, and we got to hunt a private ranch, which was kind of nice. But even hunting private property compared to like federal land that we also hunted out there, I mean, they're just as hard hunting on private as they are on federal or state land, public land. But I was relying on him for a lot of my info on elk hunting, cause I didn't know anything at that point. And we had bulls around us the full 2 weeks we were there and never got it done. I went back the second year. I kind of learned a little bit more about elk hunting. I read a few books.
You went to the same spot, right?
Yeah.
The second year.
We went back to the same spot, but that was only for the second week. The first week we hunted federal land. And after that first year too, I mean, I learned a lot about what I had to do physically just to be able to keep up with those things because they can move like nobody's business. So the second year, I also I did a little bit of watching some YouTube stuff, some videos with Corey Jacobson there, and then some of the BRO guys watching some of their videos. So I had a little bit better idea, but I'm still sitting out there with the Hoochie Mama and just the the bugle tube with the latex on top, and I had
just making noises.
Yeah, I mean, I had tried the mouth reeds that year, and all I could do was make turkey calls with them. So I was still no good with that. Yeah. And then the third year, was when Amber and I finally went, and we went to a different spot in Montana. And that winter before we went in 17, that's when I started doing a lot of building my own arrows and building arrows for Amber too. So I went down a deep rabbit hole with arrows and broadheads and all that stuff, which was great. But
so easy to do, isn't it?
Oh man, it's just crazy.
Yeah. You got like 30 different brands of broadheads laying around. All of them do the same thing and they're all going to work, but you got to try them all, right?
Oh, I know. The other thing was too that before that third year, I mean, I finally figured out how to use mouth reeds and I bought a bugle tube. So on top of that, I had found out about the elk nut. You ever heard of
Oh, yeah.
that app? So
Yeah, absolutely.
I downloaded that app and I got my hands on every podcast I could that Paul Modell was speaking on.
That was like our Bible,
Yeah.
that app.
That
And he's so fun to listen to
I
also.
know,
He's so energetic
he
and he's
gets
just,
into it
yeah, he's all about it.
and
So yeah, he's cool. I'd like to have him on here one day. We'll see.
Heck yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, I learned a lot from him.
Well, you learn the language
Yeah, you
and
can,
how to call.
yeah, you actually figured out, okay, when I hear these different kind of bugles or make these different kind of bugles, this is what it means and this is what they're saying. And the same thing with call calls. So that made just a world of difference. So that third year, we hunted all 2 weeks, and towards the end of our second week,
After being snowed off the mountain for 2 days.
yeah, which was, yeah, we were just tenting. We were in a two-man tent for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow. What'd you do when you had to come off the mountain?
We stayed in town in a hotel for 2 nights till the snowstorm passed, and then we went back up, dried our tent out, and continued.
Okay. Nice, refreshing. Get a shower and
Yeah.
all that.
Oh, it was huge. Get a
Yeah.
burger and a few beers in you.
A few shots. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Hey, let me interject. So we're at 2017 right now.
Correct.
Snowed off the mountain. Amber, we've already heard a ton about you from Pat, but let's introduce yourself too. We didn't do that, and I wanted to do that in the beginning.
I Amber Casey. I just started out bow hunting heavily, probably in my late teens, early 20s. And kind of the same thing with Pat. Always wanted to elk hunt, and I just made it happen in 2016 in Colorado. Didn't see anything, didn't hear anything, but then 2017 was my first year of real elk hunting. So
Okay.
that's a quick snap.
Okay, good. So you've got a Pat's got three up to this point. Pat's got 3 years in and you've got two. This is your
Correct.
second year. All right, good.
Yep.
Okay, so it's snowed up on the mountain. You guys are having drinks in town. Then what happens?
So yeah, then we came back and we set our tent back up, and we didn't have elk around. We found them on a property like probably 2 miles away, and there was nothing around by us. So we kind of struggled, and I mean, we still hiked our butts off every single day just to try to find something or just to see if we could get anything. And then finally it kind of warmed up a little bit and the snow melted, but we finally had a herd that kind of came back through.
And
Because
they stuck around.
yeah, and those things move. I mean, you could not see elk for a couple days and then all of a sudden the elk are there for 4 or 5 days. They'll just move miles at a time.
Well, for instance, our first day out there, the 2017 first day, setting up the tent, hear bugles all around us. And it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, oh, we have 2 weeks. Let's not pressure them. Let's not do anything. Let's glass them and just watch them. Long
This is
story
gonna be
short, this is
easy.
gonna be easy. I'm like, we're gonna wake up, we're gonna whack a bull, whack a cow, something. Wake up, they left. 4 days, they were gone. We did not hear or see an elk for 4 days after that.
That wears on you
Man.
too. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
you're walking 4 or 5 miles a day, and it's just the weather's miserable, and
Yeah.
but you still got to do it because, I mean, you're trying to get on them and just trying to find them.
What was it like like 3 days before we had to leave
Yep.
in 2017 that
Yep.
we got on that herd?
Yeah, and that morning we had a herd with probably like 4 or 5 bulls in it, and then a bull moose was actually in the same herd, but
Yeah, that was cool.
we bedded them, and then in the afternoon we got above them and I started calling, doing some calling sequences, and ended up getting this one bull fired up that was in this thick pine patch that they were bedded in. And I called in this bull, and probably to 20, 25 yards for you?
Well, mind you, I had never seen an elk close before. So I heard him, saw him raking trees, not saw him, but I saw the trees moving. You know, Pat's calling his ass off. And I'm like, holy crap, you're back, because I saw him coming. And he stepped out. I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Well, there was brush in front of him. I'm like, oh, I can sneak it through. He was 20 yards broadside and let out a bugle. And I about crapped my pants, but let the arrow go, hit a branch, deflected over his back. So I missed him. I'm like, oh, no.
So then I'm behind this pine tree. I can't see this happen, but I heard the bull run down the hill and I figured he's dead for as close as he was. But I'm like, if he comes out again, I'm going to put another arrow in him just in case. So he came out at 60 yards and I drew back. We came back out, looked for a few hours that night and didn't find anything, didn't find him. So came back in the morning, found the arrow, it had broken.
So broadhead was broke off inside of him, and we found minuscule blood.
Yeah.
I mean minuscule. So we gave up, and that was that. But,
well, we looked for 5 hours before we gave up.
Well, yeah, we gave up after the entire day of looking.
So that was awesome to actually finally put everything together, be able to call a bull in.
And then fail miserably.
Yeah.
Man, I never call them failures. I never, ever call them failures, yeah. Right? Because then you go away hanging your head. It's just a lesson learned.
Correct. It did take a while to tell myself and tell ourselves, okay, this was a lesson learned. This wasn't a failure. But I think I cried for like 2 days after that.
No. Pat, did you cry a little bit too?
I didn't cry. I was super bummed that, especially once I found out that she had missed and like my shot that I had made was going to become more important than what it actually was.
Yeah.
I was super bummed. And like that was literally in 14 years or 13 years, that was the first animal I had ever lost in my entire life.
Yeah.
So that made it even worse. I'm like, of all times that a bull would ever have to lose an animal, it had to be on a gigantic bull.
Yeah, he was a huge 5-point. Absolutely huge. But wow. So then that made this last bull that he got, or his first bull last year, that much more like just, oh my God.
Yep.
After coming back from 2017.
I'm sure that was it's not a short drive home from Montana. I'm sure that was pretty quiet
That was a long 24-hour drive.
Yep.
Very, very long.
Well, I know it's tough. I didn't take a shot last year, but I had a couple of opportunities that were not. I mean, I never got a shot. I saw a lot of animals, but my drive home, I know there was a lot of times where I shook my head and thought, man, why did that tree have to be there? Whatever, you know, there was so many things and. Probably better, you know, just whatever, ethical. And you guys did everything you could to try to find that bull after you shot it. And that's one of the better things I think that you can take away is that you did what you could in order to try to find. A lot of people just say, no, man, we lost blood. Let's go hunt another one.
Right.
No, we literally, it was a 24 hours. I mean, minus the night that night, but the whole next day until dark, we looked and looked and looked and looked. So
yeah, it was tough. That was definitely a heartbreaker, but it definitely made you want to bust your butt for this past year. And that's definitely, and especially too, this was being a different area. This area was a lot steeper than where I had hunted the previous 2 years. So it definitely opened our eyes a little bit to what we had to do for 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, so segue, right? You just segued right into it for me, so perfect. All right, so 2018 is the story that won the giveaway. Let's hear all about it. Tell everybody about their story. So I'll tell you this in the beginning before we start the story. One of the things that helped Pat win this story was that those first three or four years and that 2017 season and the adversity that he faced. and the ability to overcome that and to keep Amber and Pat to keep their heads high and know that perseverance, you know, and you keep trying and it's going to happen. And with that, I'm going to let you talk about your 2018 hunt.
All right. So the first day was funny because I overslept and or we overslept because I set my alarm, but it was only Monday through Friday and I forgot to do all week. And this first day was Saturday.
Yeah.
So the second day we get the hunt and I had five cows walk within 20 yards from me, but I needed to be like 10 to 15 feet further.
And the worst part for me was because I was behind them probably what, like 15 yards.
Yeah.
And I'm watching, I can't shoot the cows. I'm watching this line of cows and I can see Pat behind the tree. And I'm like, if he was just like 5 yards, you know, one way, he could smoke a cow. So I'm just watching like these 30 cows.
So that was that was close to be able to just tag out with a cow the second day.
Yeah. And I wanted to add, so you didn't care. Huh? You weren't chasing bulls. You didn't care. You just wanted an elk, right?
Something whatever was legal.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And so,
okay.
That's when I had a bull out that same morning. I had a chance at a bull.
Yeah. So
it was crazy.
Those cows moved by us. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, this bull bugles below us that we had no idea was there. And he walked 40 yards from us and I'm like, man, I should have cow called because he was looking for cows. And Amber should have moved up about 15, 20 yards and she could have had like a 20-yard shot on him.
I had smoked him. Absolutely smoked him.
So that second day was like, oh, man, this is awesome. We have action, but we kind of screwed it up. But anyway, we went a few more days and we had seen and heard some elk. But there was one day we were walking up to the top of the mountain. And we spooked some elk.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had seen another herd with like six spikes and a branch antlered bull that we tried going after. But we spooked this group and it was super foggy. So the whole bottom of the valley was fog, and which was really cool when we're standing up on top above it. But we hear bugling below us where we'd just come from. So we're like, all right, it sounds like they're on our side. Let's go back down the hill and see if we can go after them. And this was probably towards the end of our first week thereabouts. Yeah. So we're walking down and we make this corner.
And we're just booking. We're just walking, not even paying attention.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this cow dumps down onto the road. So we're standing there.
Open, totally open, no cover.
Can't move, but Amber's behind me and she's ranging this cow and she's just feeding on the side of the road and I'm getting ready to draw back and fling one at her. So
she's never broadside though.
She never did go broadside, but then two calves dump down onto the road and I'm sitting there still waiting for her to turn broadside. And all of a sudden in the corner of my eye, I see some more on the hillside. And I see tines. I'm like, oh man, there's a friggin' bull standing on the hill too. So I waited there for a little bit and it smelled us or didn't, and she took off.
I'm like, what just happened?
So that's another cool just experience.
Yeah.
Like almost kind of scenario.
Well, it's one of those, it changes in the blink of an eye. Absolutely changes.
Hey, what's a legal bull in Montana? What can you shoot? Is this spike legal?
No, can't shoot spikes.
The unit that we're in, it's no spike.
So okay. It's got to be a brow tined or four on a side, right?
Okay. Just a brow tined. Okay.
Just a brow tined. Okay.
Got it. Okay. Cool. I was just curious. I never really read their regulation. Never.
Oh, yeah, we could have shot a ton of
A few spikes that we saw this past year.
Yeah.
Which hopefully will be good for this year as long as we draw. But so anyway, that was probably our last really close chance. And then the second week, so Amber's birthday is September 18th. And
it was my 30th birthday too.
Yeah. So I really wanted to get her a bull, but or any elk period. Especially on her birthday, but even a few days before that, the bulls had kind of fired up and I got into screaming matches with three or four different bulls.
It was insane. Like, it, what happened in those few days made me want to start videotaping and filming, like, because it was just so intense.
I mean, I got hoarse. My voice got hoarse from trying to crawl these bulls and, like, try and mimic what they're doing.
They never let up.
It was insane.
So let me ask you this really quick. And how much of the Paul Medell, that communication with elk, were you able to put into play right there? Or was it just like there was so much going on that you couldn't even really think about what you'd practiced or what you had heard on the podcast?
Well, it's pretty good because I think every situation that we have out there, I've been able to draw something either from the Elk Nut app and Paul's thinking of things, or like watching Corey's videos or the Born and Raised guys.
You kind of just put it all together.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and everything's just situational. I mean, it depends on what the bull's doing. What does he really sound like? Like, what's his temperature at the time?
Some of it's second nature too. Yeah. It's just instinct.
So yeah, I mean, if you hear, if your cow's mewing, like, is it just a random mew, or does she sound like irritated, like telling the bull to get over by her? It really depends on what they're saying and kind of what you can decipher from what they're saying.
But even in the heat of the moment, you did a good job on, because I was even, Pat's a lot better than me, but I'm like, yep, that's the call that Pat should have made. And yep, he responded right. And if you practice and listen enough to the elk nut or whatever, then it's just second nature, regardless if it's the heat of the moment or not.
Yep. Or you try to match them. I mean, if you get if they're becoming more vocal with certain sounds that you're making, sometimes you just stick with what's working, and if that's really ticking them off, you just keep running with that and keep. It's amazing how close you can really get to these things, because you just need to push it. I mean, compared to, sitting in the tree waiting for a deer to come by you.
And you blink your eyes and they spook.
Elk's
stupid.
Elk hunting is so much more, you need to be aggressive.
Like, we literally ran up on them a couple times, like ran up on them within 50 yards, and they didn't have a care in the world.
Well, we were within 30 yards a couple times, and all you could see were hooves and legs.
Yeah.
I know. So my buddy Gus called in that bull to about 20 yards for me, and unfortunately it stood behind a tree and I could never shoot it. And I mean, I'm not, Gus was like you, man. He was in the background, just, I thought there was like five guys behind me.
Yeah.
He was raking. Gus was back there just having a heck of a time. And when it was all said and done, I went back there and he's like covered in sweat.
Yeah.
And it looked like he just came out of the gym. And, you know, I'm just kind of cooling up. I'm just kind of standing there ready to shoot a bow. And he's back there having a hell of a time. So
it's funny because as a shooter, me, like 90% of the time, because Pat's calling, I kind of caught up in, like, the bull and Pat going back and forth. And it's cool as hell to listen to them. Like, oh, they're, you know, in a pissing match. I'm like, oh, I need to get ready because there's a bull coming. You know, you kind of get caught up in that, and it's just, it's cool to listen to. It's really cool.
I'm sorry, man. I totally said I wasn't going to interrupt your story.
No.
Right in the middle of it. But I'm really into it. I think it's a good story. So I'm sorry, go back. You guys are, you're calling, everything's going.
Yeah. So I had gotten into some screaming matches, and on Amber's birthday, oh my gosh.
That was probably next to Pat shooting his bull, one of the best days of elk hunting.
It was so cool because, like, it seemed like in the morning they were really vocal in the morning, and then like midday they'd kind of cool off for a little bit, they'd bed down, and you might get a little bugle every once in a while from their beds. But the afternoon from like 4:30, 5 o'clock till dark, they were really getting fired up, and I had gone into a little screaming match with two bulls.
That's when I ran into a bear.
No, this was before that. So we had kind of sat all day, and we were going to go walk to a different spot. And we kicked up a, I think it was a cow, out of her bed, and we had no idea she was there. Yeah. So we just stayed there, and the cow never barked, which a cow barking is their
alarm.
Yeah, they're alarmed for other elk that there's danger. It's totally different from a whitetail blowing at you. So we're like, let's just stay here and start calling. So we did, and I was calling back and forth to two bulls, and one of them was getting closer, never came in. So we kept the herd started like paralleling us, and we kept just following them. And we tried to get in front of them because we knew they were probably working their way towards this field. And they worked through this field down to the bottom into the hay fields. So we got in front of them, and I'm calling this bull. And
this is getting beat dark at this time, right?
Yeah. So we're screaming back and forth to each other. And then, like, the other bulls decided they wanted to start screaming at me, too. So I'm screaming, and I was working this bull, and he was some really thick pines.
It was probably, like, 40 yards.
Yeah. And these pine trees were tall, but their branches came all the way down to, like, 3 feet from the ground. So they were heavily limbed, and you could see them walking through the trees. So I'm down the hill, and I had Amber set up above me where I thought they were going to come out. And I heard something walking, and all of a sudden she's like, there's a bear, and it's like 3 feet in front of her.
I'll go into that story probably on another podcast, but that was funny.
So
I don't know about funny. Maybe now it's funny. I bet it wasn't.
It's funny now, but yeah. At that point, no, I wanted to just leave.
So we didn't get anything called in that night. Yeah, it just got dark.
We had to leave screaming bulls. Like, I'm not kidding you. We were walking down the mountain as the whole mountainside was just lighting up. I'm like, this is stupid. So stupid.
So it was fun. But so the next day, we got up even earlier because we wanted to get to this little pocket field that they were kind of moving next to and moving through.
It was cold and damp.
Yeah, it was misting. So we're walking through from our camp in pitch black through the woods and through this field. I ran into a fence because I couldn't see it because it was so dark, and I don't walk with my headlamp on because I don't want to give myself away. And we get to this field, and
it's just probably just starting to get light.
Yeah, and we heard one bull bugle above us, but we also heard
a couple bugles,
three or four bugles below us. And we knew they were going to walk through this thick dark timber, and we knew where they bedded, so we were either going to try and cut them off as they're coming up the hill, or try to call to them while they're milling around. So it gets light.
You're not going to tell the other part of the story?
Oh, where I had a little gastrointestinal issue?
Yeah, he had some stomach issues. So as these
those were the best stories.
Did you leave that off your story?
I may have.
Come on. So
hey, it gets real out there at times, right?
Well, that's the funniest part, because there's bulls, like four or five of them bugling all around us. It's getting to be daybreak, and he's like, we're getting ready to set up on these bulls. He's like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't. He's like, nope, I have to go to the bathroom. And I'm mad. I mean, just livid. And I'm like, fine, whatever. We'll just let these bulls go by, and we'll kill them tomorrow. Whatever. So he leaves and comes back, and I'm like, are you done? Are you ready now? And they're not far away. They're only probably 150, 200 yards away.
Yeah, they're both.
When he came back from his potty break.
I can only imagine that conversation. And I'm sure the whole argument was at a whisper. So I'm sure it would have been fun to watch.
Imagine husband and wife elk hunting out there. That was pretty funny.
So, okay, yeah, so I came back from that. But, so we're standing there, and then there's this two-track road that goes through this dark timber to, like, an open area that that was cut a few years ago. So we knew we could take this two-track, otherwise everything else was pretty thick. But we're standing in this field edge, and we heard people on this two-track probably 70 feet from us. And we're like, man, like, we could try calling to them.
But you had not called at all up to this point.
Right.
Zero peeps. So he's been calling his ass off for a week and a half. Hasn't let out a bugle or a cow call at all.
And I didn't, at this point, I didn't want to give away more elk coming up from the bottom. So we basically stood there and listened to this bull bugle, and we can hear a couple cows. He had a couple cows with him. You can hear him mewing. But he just sat there, and it seemed like he was standing on that road, bugling like crazy. And the elk below us started coming up the hill.
Straight toward us.
Yep. And I'm standing on the field edge, and Amber's probably about 15 yards
at into another the woods. Little pocket. There's like a tiny 20 yard by 20 yard pocket.
Yep.
That I'm like, okay, if something steps out in here, I can shoot it. And Pat has the big field covered.
So I'm standing there and just kind of looking and listening, and out of nowhere, this friggin' spike comes into the field below me, and he stood there like a statue.
Well, I'm looking over at Pat because I can't see like into the field where Pat can see, and I'm looking at him. Pat will usually look at me. I'm like, he's not looking at me like a minute. Like, what is he doing? And then I hear a bark. I'm like, oh, that was an elk about 30 yards from him.
Yeah, and I thought we were screwed because when he barked, luckily he only barked once, and he took off down the hill, which was good. I mean, I don't think he was really super freaked out because of only barking once was a good thing. So it didn't alert everybody like, oh my God, everybody take off and get that guy here. So we're still standing there. And now this herd that was down low is pretty much like 50 yards from us. And they're just over this little rise and we can't see them.
You can see, I could see like some tines and legs and stuff, but no shot. They weren't making their way up.
So all you could do is pretty much hear them. And there's three or four bulls bugling at each other.
Yep.
And we look at each other and we're like, what in the world do we do? And I'm like, well, I don't want to call. I'm like, we could call just because there are a lot of cows and there could be one in heat. And we could try and sound like a bull that's trying to steal a cow away from them. But we hadn't said anything yet, so I decided not to say anything and give ourselves away and just stand there. So
I don't know how many times we looked at each other and just shrugged our shoulders.
It was like, it was probably 40 minutes we were standing there.
At least. I was thinking like an hour, at least an hour. It was cold.
So we're like, all right, we're just going to let them go up the hill past us. And then once they do, we'll jump on that two-track or keep following this field and get above them, try and cut them off, and then try and call to them or something. So we're standing there and
waiting, 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 waiting.
All of a sudden I hear sticks breaking.
Well, so as this happens, this is where I intervene. So I'm standing there and I can see these elk messing around in the timber, and I'm watching this one elk, this bull, and he's walking to my right, which is toward the field. I'm like, oh my God, that freaking thing is going to walk out and give Pat like a 40-yard shot. I'm like, is this really happening? So when I lost him, I looked over at Pat, and I saw him raise his bow up, and yeah.
So I can hear the sticks breaking as something's walking closer to me. And prior to any of this, I had ranged a bunch of spots below me, and I knew how fast was that I could shoot, which was 35 yards, but I was shooting a single pin. I had my dial set at 35, and like 5-10 minutes before he started walking in, I changed it to 40, just because I'm like, all right, I want to make sure that in case anything gets crazy, I know I can shoot to 40. So he walks out, and he walked out broadside, and he was 35 yards. And I'm like, all right, I told myself, he had no idea I was there. I'm like, okay, you need to aim lower because you're set at 40. So I drew back. I took my time.
And I'm totally like almost pooping my pants at this point because I'm watching, because I can't see the elk. So I'm just watching Pat from start to finish, putting his bow up, drawing back.
So I draw.
How long do you think it took? Like in reality and then for you standing there watching it?
What, oh my God, dude. In reality, it was still a while. I want to say like a minute. From the time, well, not a minute. From the time he stepped out to the time you shot, maybe 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't long.
But it was like an eternity.
So I settled my pin, and I let it go.
And it hit hard. I heard a hard hit. I'm like, oh, no.
So when it hit him, I spined him, and he dropped. And it took a second or two, and then all of a sudden, like, he reared up, like trying to want to get up.
Well, and I still couldn't see the bull. So as soon as he shot, in my mind, I'm like, okay, there's still elk around. You shot your bull. Let's just leave him and start trying to call to get something for me. You know, he's dead, whatever. So I looked at Pat. I'm like, shh, you know, be quiet. I'm like, there's still elk around. He looked at me. Oh, he's like, I signed him. Go put another arrow in him. And I'm like, we shouldn't be standing here.
So then I knocked another arrow and walked down the hill. And we were probably 20 yards from him and drew back and kind of let him. He was facing away from me, but he got up one more time. And
he kept trying to rear up.
He turned a little bit and I aimed at the back rib and let it go. And I got a full pass through, double lunged him.
And he was done pretty quick after that.
Yeah. And once I knew he was done, we both cried more than on our wedding day.
It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Just from the emotional just flood from 4 years of 2 weeks of hunting. Miles that you've walked,
thousands of dollars.
Yeah, all the training you've done beforehand, all the shooting you've done, everything just totally let loose like a dam break.
I haven't posted the video yet, but I took a short video right after he shot him, and I need to post that at some point.
I don't think I ever saw that before, actually.
Probably not.
So,
for what it's worth, I'm crying a little bit right now just hearing the story. If that makes anything better.
It was so, I mean, every deer I've shot, heck, even a grouse I shoot, I'll shake afterwards, even just shooting a grouse or a deer and just that adrenaline's flowing through you. And just to have that happen, it was unbelievable, just excitement and relief to finally attain one of the best goals that you could ever have as an archery hunter. To take something like that was just phenomenal. So
the only thing though is, you know, the bull expired and we're sitting there and a bull pipes off like 50 yards below us. I'm like, whoa, dude. Cause yeah, that bull was like 50 or 60 yards and snuck up on him and we saw him. But long story short, it didn't work out. We tried for 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Half hour, 45 minutes.
I called in two calves to me.
Yeah, Pat had two calves like 5 yards from him. And there was a big opening, and I could see the bull, and he had a few cows with him. He kept bugling, but would not come any closer. I'm like, crap. I'm like, screw it. It's do or die. So I just busted through the timber and ended up spooking him. But he was still bugling. He stopped like 50 yards later and then just continued bugling. I'm like, nope, we got to take care of your elk. Like, we tried for an hour. I'm like, we're done.
That kind of leads me into my next question, and that's taking care of the elk, right? So that's not a whitetail laying there.
No. Nope,
how did it go?
That's not a 180-pound whitetail buck laying there.
So, unfortunately, I guess fortunately or unfortunately, so between the training we had done beforehand, I mean, we were more than ready to quarter out a bull or a cow and pack one out. But fortunately, where he basically dropped in this field where I shot him, we were able to get a tractor in there. I gutted him like a deer, and we were able to put him in the tractor.
It was the tail end of the logging road. If he would have ran 50 yards anywhere else, the tractor never would have made it down there. But, yeah.
So I kind of got lucky and got the easy way out for my first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect, though, for your first one, right?
Yeah, I told him, I'm like, you're going to get so much crap from everybody about not having to pack out your bull.
But still trying to gut a bull like a whitetail is still a arduous task.
I wish I could record that, because that was an interesting, very interesting task.
You should have just threw it all in your backpack and wandered around for about 10 miles. That way you at least had a story to tell and then put it on the tractor.
Yeah.
That leads me into preparation. You mentioned earlier about how you guys prepared for your hunt. And I'm kind of curious about that. So, Pat, you mentioned like that very first year, what you learned that you needed to do from there. And then I'm kind of curious like how that developed throughout the 4 years of preparation.
Every year, actually, we've hunted between 5,500 and 8,500 was the highest that I've been to. Those first 2 years in Montana, but just to be able to get in front of them and cut something off and just run it up and down some of the hills.
You don't realize how much of an incline it is, even at average we're probably at 6,000 feet out there.
Yep.
So that's not like really affecting your lungs and the altitude, but at that altitude and just a slight incline, you run 5 yards and you're like, oh my god, I'm done for the day, I'm gonna go take a nap.
So it's pretty much we've learned that it's lungs and legs. So we're doing a lot of jogging. Might do like a 2 to 3 mile jog one day, and then the next day do like a mile jog, but at a quicker pace, just to kind of get the anaerobic part going and get your lungs working.
And keeping your heart rate up for as long as you can.
Yeah.
Type thing too.
And another thing is like the legs part. I mean, any chance we could get, we were hiking or walking with a weighted pack, and we'd start out at like 30 pounds, yeah, and then after a couple weeks up at 10 pounds at a time. Where we're at, we have a few places we can get to with some elevation, but for the most part it's kind of flat, mm-hmm, where we're at. But we make it a point to go to places with elevation that we can train. Or another thing we've done is we've just walked up and down our stairs to our basement with our packs on.
And that kicks your ass.
Yeah.
That totally kicks your ass.
Yeah, there's never any competition between you guys, is there?
Yeah. About that.
So what's the highest elevation you guys have in or around you in Michigan? Like when you go train, what are you capable of training at?
Well, the highest peak, quote-unquote peak, in Michigan is like 1,600 feet.
I don't even know
if it's that high.
There's a ski jump, and when we were there last summer, we took our packs and stuff with us, and I don't remember what the elevation is there, but that's a butt kicker just to do the stairs for that ski jump.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that on our Instagram post, but that kicked our butts. If we had that down here, we would be running that every day. Like, yeah, if you can do stairs, just strap on a weighted pack and go up as many stairs as you can, because, yep, that is probably the best training that you can do.
Yeah, for sure.
And running. Running was the biggest thing, just strengthening your lungs. I ran a lot more this year, and I think that helped.
Oh, big time. That was a huge, huge part of it was the running part, just to get your lungs going and the hiking with weight. I mean, even if you're walking down the road, I mean, even if there is no elevation, I mean, if you can hike with 50, 60, 70 pounds, throughout the summer, I mean, you got to do it every day though, or do some lunges with weight.
Well, what was the Mountain Tough Fitness?
That was the Sitka Mountain.
It was Mountain Tough Fitness program. It was kind of a quick one that they have. I think that really played a part in helping me this year too. It takes 30 minutes, 40 minutes, but it kicks your behind.
Yeah, it's tough.
And I've never been so toned in my cardio that I'm definitely doing that again this year.
And I guess on top of that too is shooting. I mean, we were shooting at least a dozen arrows a day, if not more. And if you're planning to do an elk hunt or even mule deer hunt, shoot as far as you can shoot.
Practice, yeah.
Because I've always consistently practiced at 60 to 65 yards, and I'm glad I do, because I feel comfortable taking a 60-yard shot if I have to. And but it makes a 30 or 40 yard shot seem like a chip shot,
mm-hmm.
which is huge.
And another thing is obviously diet. You know, don't eat like shit all year. Just because you're working out, that doesn't mean anything. Because we kept a pretty good diet.
Yep.
I think that helped us too.
Yep.
French fries and hamburgers every day.
Yes, exactly, Chad.
Perfect.
Exactly.
You know, one thing I did that this was, it sounds kind of silly, but anytime I was hiking with my weighted pack, I tried to hike in the side ditches that had some sort of incline, so that it was almost like side hilling all the time. And that, I think that really, it strengthened my ankles. It helped my calves. It helped everything.
Yep.
Any sort of incline, up, down, you know, traverse it, do whatever you can. It's crazy.
Yeah, I had a lot of people looking at me like, what the heck is this guy doing out here? Whatever, you know, you got to get ready somehow. So,
yeah.
How about e-scouting in the area that you went into? Did you guys get into that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were using Google Earth quite a bit.
And that's still, if you think it looks steep on Google Earth, multiply that by 10.
Yeah.
That's all I have to tell you.
Yeah, right? Go down and talk to my buddy Neil down there in Indiana about that. He knows all about it. We did Onyx Maps and all that, and we thought we had a nice little route planned, and we ended up covering, like, we covered, it was almost 2,500 feet of elevation gain in just over a mile, and it was brutal. Brutal.
Well, we had a couple spots picked out because the property that we hunt out there butts up to like a huge chunk of federal land, and we're looking at that. We're like, yeah, if there's no elk on their property, we'll just hike like a mile and a half or 2 miles to this spot that looks good. And we crested, like, we got on top of their property, right at the public land and their land property line, and we looked. I'm like, there ain't no effing way that we are going to hike a mile and a half that way. I'm like, there's no way.
But that was in 17 when we finally saw it. And I told myself, the winter of 17 into 18, that I was going to kick my butt to be able to go up into there in 18 if we had to.
Yeah,
just being able to see it with your own eyes helps a lot, I think.
Yeah, but the Google Earth part is nice because you can see if there's any meadows or benches where you think they're going to feed, or even seeing where the north-facing slopes are to see where they're going to bed at, because a lot of elk during the day, they're bedding on the north or east-facing slopes in the dark timber just to get out of that heat during the day in September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between, you know, being able to see the actual elevation on Google Earth and then using the topography maps, you can see the saddles, the benches, the whatever you're looking for. you can really put a lot together by e-scouting. It still doesn't do anything. You know, it's nothing compared to boots on the ground, but it's better than going in blind. So, oh my gosh, every day we were looking at the maps. Every single day in 2017.
Oh, I had Onyx maps almost glued to my face the whole time we were there.
Yeah.
It was out constantly.
Our first year too, yeah.
Yeah, it was out there. It was all the time. Total referencing everything. So So what was your bow setup that you were using? I'm always curious about that, and since you're the archery winner, I want to hear about your bow setup.
So I was running the Matthews No Cam. And I'm at a 30-inch draw, and I bumped my poundage up to 70 pounds, so I wanted to max out my poundage.
Oh, you were at 70?
Yep.
Oh.
So, based on that, in the winter of 17 into 18, like I said, I went on the arrow rabbit hole, and...
Well, before you go there, what were you shooting?
So, previously, before I... kind of really started digging into that too for broadheads. I think the first year I was shooting, which was stupid, but I was shooting a two blade Havoc and, which I know guys have shot. I mean, the broadhead war is just,
it's a political war.
Yeah. So the second year I ended up going with a G5 Montech, which is a three blade fixed. And then, my third year.
Did you shoot a slick trick last year?
Nope. I stayed with the Montech for my third year. And my fourth year, last year, I went with slick trick.
Oh, yeah.
So I shot the four blade standard slick trick.
I got him. I kind of transferred over to slick trick.
But so when I finally built my arrows, I mean, being a longer draw, it was tough to find a spine that I could. Because I wanted to build an arrow that was a little bit on the stiff side, just because a stiffer arrow is a little bit easier to tune than a weak arrow. So I ended up going with an Axis, Easton Axis, 260 spine.
And that was last year, right? In 2018?
2018, yeah.
Okay.
And I was shooting a 125 grain broadhead slick trick, and I had a 75 grain brass insert. And then I ended up fletching my arrows with the AAE Max Stealth vanes. So I was at 583 grains, which put me at like 255 feet per second when I chronoed it.
That's a heck of a setup on an arrow, man. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was heavy.
It was the most bang for his buck, though.
Yeah, my momentum, I was going for the best momentum I could possibly get.
That's similar to, I'm trying to build something similar this year. I'm doing about the same thing up front, except I'm doing 100 grains up front with 100 grain broadhead instead of 75 and 125. So it'll be about the same.
Okay. What's your draw length?
30.
Oh,
so okay. Yeah, you're probably about the same wingspan as me, I thought.
Yeah. Yep. Big old hammers flying out there, man.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I get so jealous. I'm like, why can't I have
What's your draw length, Amber?
My draw length, 25 and a half inches.
So, okay, so I'm curious real quick and then we'll come back, but what grain arrow do you shoot?
So mine right now is at about 420 grains. I draw 55 pounds and I'm shooting the Easton Full Metal Jacket 400 spine with 125 up front. No insert. No extra insert, though.
And do you, I'm curious for both of you guys, do you shoot the same arrow for whitetail?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, yep. Good. So you don't have to, there's no transition, you just stay.
No.
Say the same thing. Cool.
I figure for whitetail, even though I practice to long distance, I don't feel comfortable taking an ethical shot probably past 35 yards.
Yeah.
All right, man. Good bow setup. Are you sticking with the same thing for 2019?
Not quite. They're totally different because you got a new bow.
Not quite. It's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up switching to, not really switching, but I bought Matthews Halon 32 which is nice because it's the same axle to axle as the no cam. So the draw feel is the same for me, which is nice. But the back wall on that 32 is way better than no cam. Just in my feeling, but, I'm going with that. And then, this year I switched to a 5-pin fixed pin sight instead of a single pin.
And who talked you into that?
You did, but
exactly.
Cause I had shot a single pin for probably 10 years and I liked it because it was one pin. I had a clear sight picture. And that was before I made this really heavy arrow.
Because you could get away with setting your sight at 30 yards and still shooting 20 to 35 or 40 yards.
Yeah. So if I could have had a multi-pin sight on the elk I shot this year, I could have pin gapped them and actually hit where I wanted to.
But then we would have had to pack them out.
Yeah. Well, that would have been fine too. So I switched to that fixed sight, and then I'm also switching to a bone broadheads makes a single bevel two blade broadhead that I'm going to switch to also.
Are you keeping the same arrow?
Yep, same arrow for now.
Until I shoot through all those, Easton Access Easton Axis is a heck of an arrow, man. A lot of guys love shooting that, and yeah, I'm real curious about those bone broadheads. I've been eyeballing them for a little while, thinking,
"Oh, dude,
they're cool, man. They look cool."
Mm-hmm.
I just love that I've never shot a two blade like that before, but I like the fact that they're not fluted, so they're not going to make any noise, and they're just watching some of the testing that's been done on them. Just the amount of carnage and shooting through bone, it's just awesome.
Is that what Kevin shoots?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin Vistason, Deer Hunter podcast guy, he shoots those, and that's kind of where you got the idea.
Yep.
But he swears by him too.
Yeah, I'm not really on the fence. I just, what I shoot right now is pretty darn good, so I don't know if I want to make that.
Yeah.
I might. I got a new bow, so we'll see. I might do like you and just switch it all up. see what happens.
Keep it interesting.
So, yeah, right. Well, so what's in store for 2019? What do you guys got planned?
Keep your fingers crossed that we draw for Montana.
Yeah, because it's crazy because between my first year and last year, it's changed tremendously. So my first year, I bought over the counter in August.
And still had a bunch left over. Yeah. They capped their general over-the-counter non-resident licenses to 16, is it 16,000? 17,000.
So then the second year, I could have bought over-the-counter, but me and my buddy, we put in for a special draw unit, and we didn't draw the unit, so we ended up with a general tag because we didn't draw the special unit, which was fine. And then
2016.
Yeah, then 2017 when we bought over the counter, but we bought in June.
June or July, and they sold out in August.
Yeah, they were sold out within a month after we bought.
So we're like, shit. So come 2018.
Yeah, this past year.
In the spring, we're like, because you can still draw or apply for a general license. So we put in. Pat almost didn't draw. I drew just because I had a preference point from the year before because I bought it. And they, like, people did not get a general tag for Montana. I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen in 2019?
So we're hoping we can draw a tag in 19.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing about Montana is a lot of their units are general units. There's not a lot of special draw units.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but when you cap it, it's, you don't need to make them real special draw.
Right. So for the most part, I mean, if you can get a tag, you can hunt quite a bit of Montana on a general tag.
Well, what's our plan B? That's my question.
The plan B is, which we should start doing some e-scouting right now, is to probably get an over-the-counter tag in Colorado if we don't draw Montana.
Because you have a hookup there too.
Yeah. We got a place we can go, but it's all surrounded by federal land in Colorado, Southwest Colorado.
That or Idaho. I still have Idaho on my mind.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
I was going to bring that up. If you can't get Montana, maybe we should meet in Idaho.
Ooh.
And we'll all hunt together.
We'll talk offline about
that. We will talk offline.
That could be a possibility.
Yeah. And Southwest Colorado, I can talk to you about that a little bit too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. So plans for 2019. Sorry to the listeners. You don't get to hear it. We may be making plans for 2019. Anyway. So Pat, here's my big question to you. Are you planning on hunting archery? Because you just had surgery and I'm curious how that affects you.
He's designated caller. Yeah. He has no say in this. He's designated caller.
Yeah,
I've like always that. Been designated caller.
So, I like that. Yeah, that's funny.
So I guess long story short, I hurt my right shoulder. I'm right-handed. Hurt my right shoulder in high school playing football. And I had surgery on it in high school and I was good for a while, but had some issues the past 10 years. And found out when we got back from Montana this year that I had torn my rotator cuff. So I had surgery, had a couple anchors put into my shoulder and my tendon sewn to those anchors. And I'm 5.5 weeks post-surgery right now. And
you should be shooting by June or July.
Yeah, my PT doctor said, at the end of June, I'll be pulling 65 pounds for sure. And things are going good. I mean, I'm doing my stretches, doing my exercises from PT, and I'm doing them more than what they tell me, which is still good to do.
Because you're not overdoing it.
Yeah. So I'm sticking to it and doing more than what I need to be doing, just because I want to get back to pulling my bow. And that's a weird thing too, because when I hurt my shoulder, I could pull 70 pounds and had no problems and no issues pulling 70 pounds.
It was the working out part that you couldn't.
Yeah, lifting things over my head and lifting weight out away from my body, like dumbbell side raises and stuff like that, really hurt my shoulders. So I'm highly optimistic I'll be back to fighting shape and shooting shape by early summer.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you have to be designated caller, Amber is designated packer and she can haul out all the meat for you. How about that?
Yeah. Everybody says that. They're like, oh, he can't shoot, so he can be your designated packer. I'm like, I don't know how that'll go down.
It's her turn to shoot something anyway.
That's good. That's good. Well, best of luck to both of you in 2019, and we'll talk here in a little bit about what y'all are going to do.
Yeah.
So as we wrap this thing up, I just, if you guys want to leave your contact information, if people want to get a hold of you, I don't know if that's something you guys want to do or not, but you're welcome to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'll leave it to you guys to put it out there.
Well, do you put notes on your podcast so we can put like our Instagram handle and Facebook and stuff, or?
Yep, I'll put it all. It'll all be at the bottom.
Yeah, I'm Amber K918 on Instagram, and what are you, Case?
Case_8888 for Instagram.
Yeah, and reach out anytime to either of us. But yeah, we can even put our emails on your podcast notes.
Nah, I usually just put Instagram, Facebook type stuff. So
okay, yep. Yeah.
And then, of course, you guys are both in the Backcountry Rookies Nation. And if people need to get a hold of you, they can hit you on Facebook. So, too easy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, we connected with quite a few people on there, and that's always a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Facebook is good. Instagram is good. So, well, I appreciate you guys coming on. It was super cool to talk about it. Honestly, the bad thing about having you guys come on as these winners is I could probably talk for 3 or 4 hours, and you know we could easily. So trying to do a condensed version of it, it's really, really tough. But I think you guys put a lot of good information out there, so I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, no, thanks. Yeah, I could have between me and Amber, we definitely could have threw a ton of more information out there for
with stuff. with a couple little arguments in there, but
yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm sure there's plenty of those that happen on the mountain. Real quick, yeah. Do you guys ever hunt with anybody else, or is it just you two that go by yourselves?
I've never really hunted with anybody else. I don't have any girlfriends that are avid hunters, so it's usually just my brothers or my dad. And yeah, Pat's like my trusty sidekick.
Yeah, I've never hunted with anybody else.
Except Jeff.
Yeah, other than my buddy Jeff. The first 2 years, it was just the two of us. And then the past 2 years, it's just been Amber and I.
Yeah. We have some stories offline about that, too. So.
Yeah. Well, good. Good, good. Well, thank you guys for coming on. And Amber, we'll be in touch. I think we're going to do a female show with Amber coming up pretty soon that has to do with rifles and bow setups and all of that kind of stuff with Amber. So you may hear from both these guys again.
Yep.
Yeah. I also wanted to thank all the giveaway companies that sponsored stuff. Between Onyx and Vortex, Go Hunt, BHA, Mountain Hunter Box, just an awesome prize package, and I just wanted to thank everybody that gave for that. That was pretty awesome.
He's been like a little kid at Christmas, so.
Man, I'll tell you what, it was so fun putting that together too, to be able to contact those companies and to be able to talk to them. And then when I pitched the idea to them of doing this hunter story giveaway thing, everybody just jumped on board and said, "Oh, absolutely, man, we want to be part of that." So I did want to ask Pat, what did you, I think, so Go Hunt was the only gift card that was in there. What did you get from Go Hunt?
Mm-hmm. So I've been running the same rangefinder for literally the past 15 years, which is good, but
it was time for an upgrade.
Yeah, I needed an upgrade. So I ended up getting using the gift card and getting the Vortex 1300 rangefinder off of Go Hunt's website. So that was awesome. I was pretty pumped about that. Their optics are really good. I mean, not being able to raise my right arm, I haven't been able to set up the eye relief and stuff on the binos to my eyes quite yet. But
yeah, I was pretty happy with those Viper HDs. I had a pair of them for a while, and I was really, really impressed with them. I ended up upgrading them to the Razors, but there's times where I think, why did I even do that? Those Vipers were awesome just as they were for what they are. So, I'll be interested to hear how you like them when you can actually lift your arm up. Actually, I'm more worried about you shooting your bow than I am you looking through your binos. So baby steps.
Yeah,
right? We'll get there.
Right. Yeah. I figure it's a little victories.
Yep. That's it. One step at a time. So, well, guys, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk again soon.
Awesome.
Right,
thanks, Chad.
Thank you, Chad.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, so here we go with Kyle Camp's nutritional tip of the month. As you know, I said we're going to be putting one of these on the first show of every month. So you got something to look forward to all the way through elk season. We're going to have some sort of nutritional tip to kind of just reset your mind, recharge you if you're on the fitness and nutrition journey, kind of like myself. I just wanted to throw these out there so that every month, maybe you have a little reminder, a little something to keep you in the game. So here's Kyle's tip of the month. Kyle, the topic that I want to ask you about today is nutrition timing. And what I mean by that is do I get more out of a protein shake if I drink that protein shake immediately after I hit the gym, or will I get the same value out of it if I drink that protein shake at lunch?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Another big popular one, and one that we kind of believe. So a little bit of a backstory to this is, for the longest time, people were told, you know, if you're if you're going to the gym, or if you're, and I think this even applies to guys that are doing weighted pack hikes, it's not just within the walls of a gym, but if you're trying to increase your capacity to lift more, to gain any sort of muscle, the theory has always been you have to, you know, pound a protein drink as soon as you finish your last repetition, or as soon as you get off the mountain, to be able to maximize, you know, any sort of growth to your muscle that you're trying to achieve from that workout. Otherwise, you know, all of your efforts wasted. We've since come to realize that whole myth of, you know, 30 grams within 30 minutes of finishing your exercise is not actually that minutiae true. What is sort of true, or not necessarily sort of true, what we have found is that you basically get a 2-hour window on both sides of a workout. So, you know, you wake up, you have something to eat, you have a 2-hour window, you go do your workout, and then there's another 2-hour window after your workout. But what really I want people to take away from that is if you put this in a real life scenario, it would be just like doing, you know, having lunch at 1, getting off at 3, doing your weighted pack hike, or going to the gym and doing your lifting or whatever for the day. And then when you finish that, let's say the exercise is an hour and you get done around 4 or 4:30, you still have this quote unquote 2-hour window at the end of that where you can still fit your protein in for what they call maximum protein synthesis, meaning getting the most out of your workout. So what that would look like is after you finish at 4:30, then you eat dinner at 6. And so really there's no magic to this. It's just having lunch, exercising at some point, going home and having dinner within a reasonable time frame. Now, what's more important than you could do great on that end of things, but what's more important is getting the appropriate amount of protein spaced over the course of the day, so you have everything that you need at the end of the day. So that's more important than this minuscule measuring of trying to fit it in between these 2-hour blocks before and after a workout. So I think the takeaway is just include protein at meals and try to space it intermittently throughout the day, making sure that at the end of the day you've had enough. That's going to get 99.999% of the population and about as much bang for their buck from their workout in terms of muscle repair as they could possibly get.
Perfect. So it's better to spread it out throughout the course of the day than it is to just pound as much as you can right after that workout.
Yeah, I think that's the good takeaway, is that making sure you've got enough over the course of the day rather than trying to time it. You definitely do not need to be, you know, downing this 30-gram protein shake while you're walking out of the doors of the gym. You've theoretically got a 4 or 5 hour window where you can squeeze protein in and still get great effects. I mean, that's really important to understand. And I think even above that, you know, if that seems too nuancy for some people, I wouldn't blame them. So the major focus is making sure you get enough protein over the course of the day. So roughly about 1.6 grams to 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight to add on some muscle and make your exercise, you know, quote unquote, the best bang for your buck.
Gotcha. Real quick, what's the conversion on that 1.2 gram and kilo per body?
In terms of how many grams per pound?
Yeah.
So it would be about 0.7 grams to 1 gram per pound of body weight.
Okay, perfect. That's easier for an old hillbilly like me to translate. So, all right. Well, awesome tip, Kyle. I'm glad we cleared that one up, because I know I've always heard it that you got to drink that protein shake right after that workout in order to get the best gain. So I'm glad we kind of squashed that one, and now we can space it out throughout the day. So thanks, man. Okay. Thank you to Kyle for coming on and doing that. Kyle, of course, is from Valley to Peak Nutrition. Kyle and Valley to Peak were very gracious to put together a nutrition plan for me this year in order for me to try to lose some weight and get in better shape and better health. And so the plan that I'm doing is kind of a conjunction of Valley to Peak nutrition plan and then an iHunt Fit fitness plan. And that's going really, really well too. I'm getting in a lot better shape. I've lost almost 20 pounds right now, and I've lost a little over 2.5 inches off of my waist, almost 2¾ inches off my waist. So everything is going really good. The next show coming up is going to be Dan Thomas, and Dan is the rifle hunting story winner. So he's the next winner coming up. And then the one thing that I wanted to touch on was coming up the end of March, we're going to be doing a show where it's just me and the Backcountry Rookies team, me, Jordan, Gus, Jeremy, just kind of sitting around talking about what our plans for 2019 are, some of the gear changes that we have went through over the winter, you know, after season, and some of the changes that we made to our setups, just kind of the four of us getting together and BSing a little bit. And on that show, like I said, it's going to be the end of March. On that show is where I'm going to announce what we're doing for the 2019 hunting story giveaway. So stay tuned for that. It's awesome. Two really awesome prize packages coming, one archery, one rifle. And we're going to do it again, just like we did last year. So get ready for that. And to wrap this thing up, as always, I say thank you to Dan Johnson at the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network for hosting this show and many other shows. If you're looking for great content, whether it be whitetail, big game, fishing, bears, whatever you're looking for, Dan's got somebody that's got that content. Jump over there and check out Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. And with that, next week, Dan Thomas. We're looking forward to it. It's a great moose hunting story. It's a good story. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. So come back next week and check it out.